America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Logie. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
And hello.
Yeah, sorry. You went quiet there for just a second. That's all right, though.
Yeah.
This is, once again, it's a two-person show this week. Fortunately, it'll probably be the last one. The band season for Teresa's son ends this week. This is the finals, so she should be back next week. So this week's episode is going to be for October 23rd, 2021. Halloween's only a few days away. Not that, honestly, I see many trick-or-treaters in these parts. Do you ever see any trick-or-treaters over where you live, Chris?
Don't know. This will be my first one here.
Well, how about where you used to live?
There'd be some, but not that many.
Yeah, weirdly enough, for such a huge cultural tradition, I don't know if, like, kids these days are really that into Halloween that much. Like, is it just me, or has Halloween become more of, like, a adult tradition more than kids?
It probably depends on if you have kids or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible.
Being in areas that have plenty of kids.
Yeah, part of the other issue is that, let's be honest, there's a bunch of people that ruined Halloween for just about everybody. You know, there are some neighborhoods that are just kind of unsafe, I guess. Which, they're few and far between, but, you know, they do exist. But then you've also got, like, all these super overprotective helicopter parents. So you'll have them, like, organize, like, parking lot trick-or-treats or, you know, church stuff. And it kind of just kind of wrecks the whole spirit of the holiday. But yeah, it's, I don't know, maybe this year I'll actually have some that'll come around. I almost never do, though. In fact, I don't think I've had a single trick-or-treater show up at our house in a good decade at this point. But,
more for anyway. You.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so Halloween, a few days away, and it's definitely starting to feel like it. Actually kind of chilly here right now. But yeah, so for this week's edition of the show, what do we got? Well, as always, we're bringing the COVID dump truck back out of the garage. One of the more famous members of the Bush administration, the second one, and also I think he was a member of the first administration too, died this week. That reconciliation bill keeps shrinking, and well, you're going to find out why. It's one individual. We got more news on the January 6th Insurrection Committee. The Trump Organization's got a bunch of bullshit, including a new social media platform, and that one crashed and burned so goddamn fast. We got some ransomware attacks. And we also found out the exact time when the Vikings arrived in North America about a millennia ago. Yes, that is true. Also, a bunch of labor stuff. There was a walkout. A strike was managed to not happen just at the last minute. Because of the conditions at a sort of low budget film that was being made this week, somebody ended up getting killed with a prop gun and another person was injured. But we got that. We got some entertainment stuff as well. All this, hey boy, on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us off as we always do. Let's talk about the stuff we've been up to this week. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Yeah, so I managed to get around to watching Dune.
Oh, all right. And how was it?
That was a big budget sci-fi movie.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure if I know exactly what happened. Because it's...
Well, it's only like one half of the book, which kind of...
Yeah, and it's a very kind of slow movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 2.5 hours. I kind of get the general gist of what happened. But I'll have to watch it again just to better understand what was going on.
Because
It feels like they spent a lot of money on a bunch of big-name actors that won't be around for the next movie.
Yeah. A lot of big characters die in that story fairly early on, yeah. Unfortunately.
And one of them doesn't show up until like the last 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Before they end it on a cliffhanger for whatever's going to happen next.
Which I've read the book, so I know what happens next, but
yeah. So that was kind of neat. I don't know if I enjoyed it yet or not.
That seems to be like the common opinion I've seen of people who've seen it. It was like, I think it was okay. I'm not really sure I know what happened, though.
Probably helps to have read the book.
Yeah.
First, because they do a little bit of background narration at the start of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
On, like, spice and this other stuff.
Yep.
But then they just go through a bunch of other stuff.
Yep.
It's like, oh, this seems like a lot for something that's maybe the framework is kind of simple.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's these weird people that are just all like big bald meatheads, essentially.
Yep.
So that's all weird. But yeah, that's Dune.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I finished up Squid Game.
Ah.
Watched the last few episodes there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really well done show.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of goes the way I thought it would.
Mm.
The way that you would expect. But yeah, they do some interesting stuff in the way it ends and set up a new season. It's pretty interesting. Especially those last few episodes, it's kind of these characters dealing with the trauma of what's happened to them,
mm-hmm.
what they've had to do and all that. So yeah, kind of does some pretty neat stuff there. So I'm curious to see like what is next for this, but yeah, that's Squid Game.
Yeah.
And also been kind of dipping back into another Adult Swim show after watching Harvey Birdman a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Checking out C-Lab 2021.
Oh, yeah. That's old school right there. That was like one of the first shows that they showed when Adult Swim first started.
Yeah. It's a show that is a comedic follow-up to, what is it, C-Lab 2020?
Yep.
And they go pretty ridiculous pretty early on.
Oh, yeah.
There's not really much attempt to be more subdued
mm-hmm.
to it outside of maybe a couple of episodes. The one I just watched is played pretty straight with this nuclear sub that crashes
mm-hmm.
Into some rocks nearby. And they just play it all straight.
Mm-hmm.
Get the sub back up and running, then mm-hmm. it ends with it crashing into C-Lab and blowing it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
How every episode ends is C-Lab blows up.
Yeah. This pretty much after Cartoon Network kind of got all the the copyright stuff for like the old Hanna-Barbera and Ruby Spears properties, which, you know, that's, again, that's where C-Lab comes from. And also Space Ghost and Birdman and all that stuff. Johnny Quest and all that. They basically hit upon this formula where it's like, yeah, let's just repurpose all this old shit and give it a new comedic veneer. And fuck them if it didn't work.
Yeah, and C-Lab is kind of the cheapest of those shows, I would say, just the way that they do everything.
It's
repurposed stuff as much as they can, where like Harvey Birdman is just...
Well, Harvey Birdman is all new animation. But C-Lab 2021, they basically just repurpose all the original animation that they can use. Not always, they do on occasion make some slight alterations if the scene calls for it. But yeah, that is what they do. It's, and when I say like they repurpose the animation, it's not to the extent like they did with Space Ghost, because they had a lot more material to work with. But you can definitely see it if you watch enough of it.
And you can just see the sort of low quality of the art that they're using because it's old art.
Well, no. Well, actually, it's mostly because it was Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's not necessarily a slight against Hanna-Barbera. That was just the business model that they took up because, you know, animation is expensive. And if Hanna-Barbera was good at anything, it was learning how to cut corners.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ever watch like old, you know, like old reruns of like the Flintstones or whatever, and see how many times they recycle that one scene of them, of, you know, Fred and Barney walking against a looping background.
Yeah.
You know.
But yeah, they do some really good episodes. Just
Some of them are fire. Oh yeah, some of them are screamingly funny. It really is.
Yeah, there's one where they're like filming a movie in C Lab.
Yeah.
So the voice actors are just playing.
Yeah. Is it the one where they're filming like a documentary or whatever?
I thought they were filming a movie, the Tin Fins thing.
Mm-hmm. That's possible.
I assume the spoof of the Sam Jackson movie.
Yeah. There's another one I remember where they were filming a documentary with like a Jacques Cousteau type. And he's like, he's got like these weird French idioms with a really thick French accent and talking about how everything is like a mother's womb or shit like this. It's
that's one where they have they just send a French dude with the to go do something.
Yeah.
And he's just being very French. Not even saying like French, but he's speaking in a heavy French accent when he's saying things, and everybody's like, what the fuck is he saying?
Yeah. But anyway.
The episode with the cola vending machine that lands on Murphy as everybody is like left. For, I think, an MC Chris concert. There's like a 2-episode stretch where they just play a bunch of MC Chris music, which is pretty weird.
Mm.
A little bit. I mean, he voices a character, but they don't really do his music in that show for some.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like a two-episode stretch where they do that, but the rest of the crew is gone because they go to an MC Chris concert, and he apparently asks them to tour with him. So that's why how Captain Murphy is by himself for a long time, and supposedly falls in love with the scorpion that keeps stinging him. That goes to fight the robot that keeps cleaning up his teeth that get knocked out by the cans that get shot out of the vending machine. That makes no sense because the vending machine is on top of him. But lots of fun stuff. There's like the Bizarro thing that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
But they're all just stupid idiots. They're just weird. So yeah, lots of fun episodes there.
Yeah.
And nicely, they're like 11 minutes long, so it's not too long of a watch to get through a bunch of episodes. But yeah, that's been the bulk of my watching this week. As for games, been playing more Metroid Dread.
Yeah.
I think I've gotten over a hurdle that shows up where you kind of get an idea of where things are going at the end, because you have a certain character show up that is just dropping tons of exposition on you for what's going on. And that got real annoying right around there, because they then introduce a new enemy type that is like a new enemy to face one-on-one in these special areas, kind of like mini bosses. They're just super fucking annoying. And those kind of enemies in like a Metroid where you're not sure if they just have infinite health because you're supposed to figure out the one way to kill them, or if you're just supposed to, you know, outlast them.
Mm-hmm.
So like ding away at their health until they no longer have any.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up dying a bunch until I just got the right run, or I dodged their attacks for the most part, because they take out huge chunks of your health.
Mm.
I think at this point I had something like 80 or 90 missiles
mm-hmm.
at a time. Now I'm at over 100, which seems like this is a lot. But I've just gotten upgrades to those and the main beam attack kind of stuff. So I definitely tell they were at a point where their enemies are just harder to kill.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where they're just basically, you know, sponges. And they just finally did a big upgrade to the main weapons you have.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a little less of that. I'm sure they're going to find other ways to be damaged sponges. So I was kind of at a certain point, I was like, man, fuck this game. and not even in a, you know, like a good way. Just kind of like a fuck this game and just leave it almost. Because these enemies were so annoying and so kind of disruptive to the pace of the game. But luckily you kind of get past them if you can, and they turn them into a different form that is much easier to deal with. So instead of being like a, you know, 10 to 15 minute session of just trying to beat this one enemy, it's, you know, more of like a minute or two of beating them. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with Metroid Dread. Also been playing Horizon Chase Turbo. I got the Senna Forever expansion, did a stream on that yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Liking that a lot so far. The whole thing, all the content they add is pretty good for what it is. The career mode is kind of, it's kind of a series of races. It's like five chapters worth covering his career. And they seem to progressively have more races in them with each season, but they're much more lenient on your ability to progress on these races than the main campaign is. I remember a lot of the main campaign, you'd have to go back and find, you know, races where you didn't get all the objectives or didn't get the gold or whatever, so that you could keep unlocking new races in the later parts of that game. And here, a lot of the races just require you to, especially early on, just like, oh, get, you know, fifth or better or third or better, that kind of thing. Then you get up to, like I was in the third chapter of five, and they were getting up to like third or second for them. So I'm assuming they'll require you to win every race for the last chapter probably. But they do a pretty good job of not making it reliant on getting all the objectives, but that stuff will be required, I believe, to get all of the unlockables, the other vehicles and such. So for $6, it adds a lot of content to it. So I'm definitely enjoying that. And also got back into No Man's Sky because their fourth expedition is out now, which is tied into the Halloween season. So it's spooky. It involves basically a big giant sandworm. At least in the first planet you get to, that's you're constantly having these worms kind of bursting out of the ground.
Yeah.
You know, going across the place. And so you have to sort of find their burrows, then all these tendrils poke out that you have to shoot and kill, and you gather some weird-ass stuff. The way that the expeditions work is just a series of goals to complete. A lot of them are basic, especially for the first one. It's like, oh, get your ship. You know, explore this first burrow. You know, you got to repair your ship so you can actually fly it and get out of the out into the system and eventually over to another system. That kind of stuff. But then there's a lot just like, oh, survive on extreme heat planets. survive. Like you have to take actual damage on an extreme heat planet. So let it burn through your shield and all that kind of stuff. A lot for, you know, going after these burrows, taking down these weird tendril things, all this kind of stuff. I'm sure it gets much harder in some of the later stuff that they're doing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of interesting stuff there. So that was a stream I did today, sort of going through at least some of the early stuff. I'll probably continue it tomorrow and sort of see what's next on that. So that's been pretty much it for me, Brandon. How about you?
Yeah, well, as for me, I said during the Day Zero update earlier this week that I said I was going to go out and get a copy of Alan Wake Remastered because I'd never played the original, and, you know, it was only $30, and I had the, you know, the credit stored up at GameStop, so why not? So I did, and I went and I got a copy, and yeah, I've been playing it for the last couple days. And, yeah, I mean, you can definitely tell, first of all, that it's a remaster, not a remake, because, I mean, you can still definitely tell, like, this is a game from, like, the Xbox 360 PS2 era, because the character animations are, they're not bad, you know, at least in the cut scenes, but when you're actually in gameplay mode, they're very sort of exaggerated and wooden dollish, if you know what I mean. Like a ventriloquist dummy. Yeah, the character animations, like in-game when they're talking or whatever, really aren't that good. Everything else, though, is pretty damn good. So, obviously, this is from Remedy, the same people that made, you know, Max Payne and also Control recently, which this game and Alan Wake take place in the same universe, and I think the most recent Control DLC specifically talks about Alan Wake and his whole situation. But basically, the game's overall story is that you are playing this guy named Alan Wake, who is a famous writer. He's basically like a Stephen King type figure. In fact, he even quotes Stephen King at the very beginning of the game. And Wake, he's famous for writing a series of thriller novels that plot-wise are kind of vaguely similar to the plot of Max Payne. Anyway, he recently finished that series with a 6th book, and now he's trying to do something new, but he's been suffering from a bit of writer's block that's lasted him a good 2 years. So his wife, Alice, decides that they should go on a vacation to this place called Bright Falls, Washington, which looks an awful lot like Twin Peaks. Right down to, you know, being in the Pacific Northwest, foresty area with a lot of weird-ass people who live in it. But basically what happens is they end up staying on a cabin in the middle of this place called Cauldron Lake, which is a lake that's on the, basically water filling up a dormant volcano. And then suddenly something happens, and for all he knows, his wife has been kidnapped. And at some point, he ends up getting into a car accident. And when he wakes up, he realizes that he is basically lost a whole week of things that he does not remember taking part in. But what's especially strange is that as he goes about, he starts finding these pages of a manuscript called Departure that is supposedly written by him, but he does not remember writing it. And as the game goes on, you'll start to realize that this manuscript is actually predicting things that are going to happen in the future of the game. Sometimes it can be as little as, you know, in the next 5 minutes, or I can be as far off as another chapter. Basically, as he's going about trying to find his wife and dealing with the kidnapper, every so often he gets attacked with this thing he calls the Darkness. It doesn't really have a proper name, but it's this weird entity that comes about, and whenever it does, it will essentially possess people that he calls the Taken. And the only way to actually literally fight off the darkness is with light. And by light, I mean like quite literally. You have a flashlight that you can use, or you can get into what are called safe havens, which are essentially, floodlights, streetlights, stuff that you can get to that surround you with light. And they essentially kind of act as checkpoints. And the sort of like stuff you have to deal with as far as enemies are concerned, like the Taken, which in order to fight them first, you have to use your flashlight to sort of get the, you have to use the flashlight to make them vulnerable. And then you can attack them with, whatever gun that you happen to get. You can get a pistol, a hunting rifle, a shotgun of different kinds. But you'll also have access to stuff occasionally to like a flare gun, which is basically this game's version of a rocket launcher or a grenade launcher that takes out like a bunch of Taken at once. You'll also occasionally get access to flashbang grenades. The other enemies you have to worry about is basically what the game calls poltergeists, which is when the Taken decides to possess some large, heavy object and tries to throw it at you. And this can be anything from like couches to boulders to eventually it'll get as large as like cars or train cars, or at one point it even possesses a fucking combine at a farm to try and get you. But yeah, it's really good. It also reminds me of Control in certain parts, because much like Control and actually like a lot of Remedy's games, you'll occasionally come across like television sets that will have like episodes of this TV show, which in this case is a sort of a Twilight Zone-esque type show called Night Springs, which is related to the game because Alan Wake got his start writing episodes for them. It's overall, it's an amazing game. I have been told that the original version is actually kind of short. But I've also heard that in the remastered version, they actually added some additional chapters. So I'm going to see how that goes. But so far, yeah, heavily recommend it. It's pretty damn good. A lot of fun. Very high stress, high tension, though. When you're sort of under attack from the darkness, the game's atmosphere gets really fucking tense. Especially because like the sound that the darkness makes is like accompanied by like this whooshing wind sound that almost kind of sounds like the fan in the PS4 itself. Which makes you think that it's going on overdrive and it might explode at any moment. Which is, very stress inducing, but it's a good game regardless. On top of that, I am, of course, still pecking away at Fallout New Vegas. I'm at the part now where I got to decide what I'm going to do with the Brotherhood of Steel, if I'm going to destroy them all or not, since I am currently technically working for Mr. House. Continuing my sort of Halloween horror watching theme that I've been doing this month, I watched the original Clive Barker's Hellraiser from way back in the 80s. That movie has aged shockingly well, and I think it's mostly because of the use of practical effects that Clive Barker went with. It still looks really good and really gruesome and gory. Honestly, not really that scary, to be completely honest, because there aren't really a lot of jump scares or anything like that. It's mostly just because of the grim, violent atmosphere of it and what were, for the time, pretty over-the-top gore effects for a movie back then. And also, of course, it was a movie made in the 80s, so, the fashion and, reflects it, obviously. And other than that, I'm just dealing with, you know, Halloween shenanigans. Which, by what I mean by Halloween shenanigans is, we're supposed to be in October and Halloween hasn't happened yet, but I'm already seeing fucking Christmas decorations going up. Which, by the way, have you seen that yet, Chris?
No.
You haven't? Well, lucky you. Because, yeah, I'm already starting to hear fucking advertisements on my car radio for Christmas music and shit, and it's not even November yet.
Yeah, they've had Christmas stuff in stores for at least a month or so now.
Yeah, no kidding. God fucking damn
it. Get your Halloween, Christmas, and Thanksgiving stuff all at one time.
Mm-hmm. At this point, they might as well just meld all three of the fucking holidays into a single one.
Oh, they're already starting Black Friday stuff.
Yeah, I've been getting fucking in my email now from, like, Best Buy. It's like, yeah, yeah. We're, you know,
doing Walmart's making it part of their Walmart Plus thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you gotta pay $100 for the privilege of getting a few hours early on those deals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is, stupid.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then, with that out of the way, it's now time to move on. Do you want to just before we move on?
Nope.
No? All right, then. Awesome. Well, for that way, we're now moving on to everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And quick question. Chris, when you were young or a teenager, did you ever do bathroom graffiti?
No.
You didn't? I did. I wasn't like a bad kid or anything, but bathroom graffiti was like the one thing I did do. And, it wasn't anything particularly, major or anything. Like I did draw a penis on a bathroom stall once or twice, but it wasn't anything major. Like I wasn't doing any major, like, you know, for a good time call shit or anything like that. But it probably won't surprise you to know that graffiti is actually not exactly a modern concept. Graffiti is something that people have been doing pretty much for as long as written language itself exists. And here in the Western world, we have actually an entire, literally an entire class of graffiti that archaeologists like to call graffito, because it was graffiti that they found that had been preserved in the ancient world of the Roman Empire. And much, you would think, like in some ways you would think, oh, so like graffiti in the Roman Empire, there must be like some high-minded philosophical stuff, or, you know, maybe it'd be something like just like regular love letters or stuff. And yeah, you got that. But the vast majority of it was basically about as crass and juvenile as modern graffiti was in the modern sense. And usually these places could be found everywhere. They would be found in obviously places like you know, brothels or restaurants, stuff like that. But a lot of them would show up in a place known as what we're called the Thermopolium. And for those who don't know what a Thermopolium was the ancient Roman equivalent of like a fast food stand, or just like a food stall. Because unlike, you know, the regular, you know, like the aristocracy who had like cooks that could cook for them, the average person, you know, if they had a chance to cook at all, you know, they would only be able to cook like maybe a small porridge or something like that. Otherwise, they had to go out and about to actually get, get food from food stalls. And if you couldn't find it in the marketplace, you had to go to these Thermopolium, which were usually located fairly close to like the various apartment complexes that you would find in, you know, that, you know, the average working class or middle class Roman citizen lived in. But as was the case for back then, people put a lot of just really lewd, dirty, bizarre graffiti from that era. And so, thanks to the people at cashguard.com.au, they collected a bunch of Roman graffiti that I will, I just for the, you know, for the sake of, you know, just humor. So here we go. Here is some actual graffiti that was been found specifically in the city of Pompeii. Which, as most people know, Pompeii famously was destroyed by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius in 79 CCE. So most of this was almost complete, you know, very well preserved. So, and remember, this is all translated into English from originally the Latin, which means it's going to sound a little, some of it's going to sound just a wee bit, you know, stiff. But here we go. So here we go. Okay, so a lot of these were around a Thermopolium and a nearby brothel. Here we go. Okay, so the Tavern of Verecundus, there was a graffiti that says, Restitus says this, Restituta, take off your tunic, please, and show us your hairy privates. Restituta, of course, being a woman. there was also the Bar and Brothel of Inilus and Papio, which says, Weep, you girls. My penis has given you up. Now it penetrates men's behinds. Goodbye, wondrous femininity. Sounds like he got rejected. let's see. This one is the House of the Cytherus, which was below a drawing of a man with a large nose. It said, Amplicatus, I know that Icarus is buggering you. Salvius wrote this. Again, that's one of the other things, too. You'll notice a lot of these, the dude will, like, because they didn't really have the equivalent of, like, you know, a dash and then the person's name underneath it, they basically had to write out, like, this was written by so-and-so, or if you want to know who wrote this, his name was blah, blah, you know, that thing. Here is from a bar, and this one is actually quite nice. It says, We two dear men, friends forever, were here. If you want to know our names, they are Gaius and Aulus. All right, that's nice. Let's see. From the bar of Athicus, it says, I screwed the barmaid. Well, good for you. let's see. There was one from a gladiator barracks. Actually, a couple of gladiator barracks. There's one here that said, Floranius, privileged soldier of the 7th Legion, was here. The women did not know of his presence. Only 6 women came to him, too few for such a stallion. Yeah, I'm sure. Then, of course, you got the normal ones like Anticus hung out here with his girlfriend, Cythera, you know. Average stuff like this. The House of Pascius Hermes, which was a public house, which is where somebody near a bathroom stall wrote, Watch it, you that shits in this place. May you have Jove's anger if you ignore this. Yeah. Then there was a street wall where somebody wrote, Theophilus, please don't perform oral sex on girls against this city wall like a dog. Yeah. One of my personal favorites is down here towards the bottom where it's funny because it's basically like a dialogue between a couple of people. Basically, it seems like this dude met a girl in met this girl or he was trying to like court this girl somewhere. And there was this like thing between friends. And it's just, it's hilarious. Here it goes. It was between these two men, Severus and Successus. And it goes like this. It was in the bar of Prima, and Severus wrote this. It says, Successus, a weaver, loves the innkeeper's slave girl named Iris. She, however, does not love him. Still, he begs her to have pity on him. His rival wrote this. Goodbye. And then Successus comes in, and he actually writes underneath it, Envious one, why do you get in the way? Submit to a handsomer man and one who is being treated very wrongly and good-looking. Severus then writes, finally, underneath, I have spoken. I have written all there is to say. You love Iris, but she does not love you. Yeah, that shit's just hilarious. So there's this other one from a Herculaneum bar. It goes, Two friends were here. Well, they were. They had bad service in every way for Epaphroditus. They threw him out and spent 105 and half sesterity, most agreeably on whores. Here, oh, and at the same bar, there was another piece. Apple, Chamberlain, Dexter, Slave of Caesar, ate here most agreeably, and had a screw at the same time. Yeah. And what's even funny is there's a third one with Apple S. With these two. It's so funny because apparently these two, like, were a regular at this bar. And they ended up doing, like, a third and final graffiti they were able to find by these two that said, Epilus Musk and his brother Dexter each pleasurably had sex with two girls twice. God, that is so fucking funny. But really, if anything, this just goes to show the fact that, honestly, humans are really been pretty much the same pretty much throughout history. Cultures are different, religions are different, but we're all just grown-ass children in the end. And, well, that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. Oh, that was fun. All right. Well, all right. Moving on from there, from there to the show proper, or what we call the show proper. As always, we have to unfortunately start with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole is a massive asshole. It is the Parkland shooter who this week pled guilty to murdering 17 people.
Yep. Yeah, so he went and did this hearing via Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the relatives of the victims that had to deal with all of this shit as well. But yeah, luckily, you know how long this been since this guy did this? He is 23 now.
Yeah, he did this back when he was a teenager, didn't he?
Yeah.
This was 2017. Well, no, not 2017. It was earlier than that.
It was January of 2018, I believe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he had 17 counts of murder, 17 counts of attempted first-degree murder for those wounded in the February 14th, 2018 attack. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right near the beginning of the year. Yeah, so seems like it's going to take the plea. I don't know if it's a deal or anything, but at least doing the reasonable plea and hoping that it seems like it's going to be down to whether he's going to get the death sentence or life without parole. So that's going to be...
Well, I mean, the reason he took the plea, he decided to do the guilty plea was because he thought he could do it to avoid the death sentence, right?
Yeah, but that'll be up to the jury now, or whoever's deciding this whole thing.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I would not be surprised if his ass gets the chair, but yeah. And final, and also our other assholes of the week are Johnson & Johnson. Commercial bankruptcy maneuver to create a spinoff company for all of its baby powder lawsuits to focus on.
Yeah, so this is a whole thing. It's very much like, oh, it's a corporation thing doing the corporation thing.
Yeah.
Minimizing the damage. So they have had roughly 38,000 suits over this claims that the talcum baby powder had cancer-causing asbestos in it. That has been linked to women getting ovarian cancer and a bunch of other stuff. So the way that they dealt with this, it's a Texas state law they're taking advantage of to spin off a new company called LTL and dumped all its asbestos-related liabilities, including the avalanche of lawsuits, into the new firm. So that I believe the new company is essentially worth something like $2 billion versus the entire Johnson & Johnson company being something like $380,000 or $380 billion, something like that. So the amount that they could potentially get out would be way less than what they would if they hadn't done this. And so, yeah, people like House Rep Katie Porter have been calling them out on this. Let's see. Johnson & Johnson filed in court last week to split its baby powder from the rest of the company. Why? J&J knew asbestos laced some bottles, but kept it a secret for decades. Tens of thousands of women with ovarian cancer are assuming the company wants to shield its assets. Yeah, so that's definitely a very shitty thing to do to avoid major damages. So hopefully there's a way to stop this from happening, be able to shield themselves this way.
But fortunately, it's not all bad. We do have our hero of the week because Dr. Rachel Levine became the first transgender four-star officer in U.S. history.
Yep. She is the nation's most senior transgender official. Across any of the country's 8 uniformed services. She was the Assistant Secretary of Health, sworn in Tuesday as an admiral, the highest-ranking official of the U.S. Public Health Service Commissioned Corps, 6,000 uniformed officers entrusted with protecting the nation's public health. Her appointment also made her the organization's first female four-star officer. So, yeah, good news.
Yeah. All right. So, awesome there. All right. And moving on from there, we're now moving on to the from the prop show proper to the proper show proper. We start with the fact that the former Secretary of State of the second Bush administration, George W. Bush, and was also a fairly well-renowned general during the Bush administration, passed away this week. He basically died from a cocktail of complications from COVID, as well as, you know, suffering from a degenerative bone cancer.
Yeah, multiple myeloma.
Yeah.
The cancer of plasma cells that suppresses the body immune response, as well as Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the Secretary of State under George W. Bush, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff for his father. As well as, I believe he was also, he also fought in Vietnam. So he had a part in 3 of the biggest wars we've had in the last, 50, 60 years.
It also recently came out that he's kind of the reason why there were not stricter, more harsher trial and penalties for the commitment of the My Lai massacre.
Yeah,
he apparently said that they, quote-unquote, acted appropriately. So apparently this dude has a part in about war crimes in 3 of America's biggest wars.
Yeah,
and he famously is the one who lied his ass off about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq in front of the UN General Assembly.
Yep, he got put into that by Cheney.
Because
it was known that that he and Bush were looking to get into Iraq even before 9/11 happened. That just gave him a cover to let them try to do anything they wanted.
Yep. So, as you can imagine, I was not exactly in a sort of self-whipping rapture over this man's death. I frankly do not view him as a very positive figure. Honestly, I got kind of sick at how the media sort of treated him as one.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't. He caused a lot of grief and suffering for a lot of innocent people over several generations. Anyway, moving on from there, we are going into the garage, opening up the door. Beep, beep, here comes the COVID-19 dump truck. And we've only got a couple of COVID stories to talk about this week. As far as like vaccination rates are going in the country, at last check, and for those who are wondering what I'm using, it's usafacts.org. They have a U.S. coronavirus vaccine tracker that you can use. And as of, yesterday, October 22nd, the rate was at 67% of the population have received at least one dose, and 58% of the population have been fully vaccinated. So we're actually really close to 60% of the country being vaccinated, which would be a clear majority. But remember, we need to get the country up to around 70%. But we'll see where that goes. But yeah, so the CDC recently endorsed booster shots for Moderna and Johnson & Johnson, along with mix and matching, which for one thing means if you are a person who got the Moderna shot, like me, or you got the one single shot Johnson & Johnson one, they are suggesting that you get a booster shot if you want it, especially if you're 65 or older. And they're also saying that, you know, it doesn't, you know, it's okay to mix and match which booster you get. Yeah.
So the current list, let's see, they say for individuals who received a Pfizer Moderna COVID-19 vaccine, following groups are eligible for a booster shot at 6 months or more after their initial series. Mm-hmm. 65 years and older, ages 18 plus, who live in long-term care settings, who have underlying medical conditions, or who work or live in high-risk settings. Mm. For the nearly 15 million people who got the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine, booster shots are also recommended for those who are 18 and older and who were vaccinated 2 or more months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see. These recommendations are another example of our fundamental commitment to protect as many people as possible from COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
The evidence shows that all 3 COVID-19 vaccines authorized in the U.S. are safe, as demonstrated by the over 400 million vaccine doses already given.
Mm-hmm.
They are all highly effective in reducing the risk of severe disease, hospitalization, mm-hmm. and death, even in the midst of the widely circulating Delta variant.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's good to see.
Mm-hmm. And we also got some more good. The Pfizer vaccine for kids 5 to 11 appears to be more than 90% effective, which is definitely a good sign.
Yep. So they just started showing off this data the other day. Mm-hmm. The FDA released the company's briefing documents Friday in a prelude to a meeting of expert advisors to the agency scheduled for Tuesday.
Mm.
They studied a 10 microgram vaccine dose in children 5 to 11, a third of the dose that's used for adults and older children.
Mm-hmm.
Lower dose was chosen to minimize side effects because it still prompts a strong immune response. Yeah, the vaccine appeared to be more than 90% effective against symptomatic COVID-19. Mm. None of the safety problems were identified in the company's studies. No cases of heart inflammation were observed. Mm. Only a few thousand children were included in the research, so that sort of rare problem wouldn't necessarily be detected. But the antibody response to the vaccine was comparable to the one seen in people ages 16 to 25. And so, yeah, the FDA is also working on their own analysis, so we might know if they're going to approve this mm-hmm. as soon as next week.
God, I hope so. We need it. Yeah. But, yeah, because, you know, I hope, so, you know, quicker we can get these vaccines in the kids' arm, you know, the quicker it'll be, we'll be able to start going back to normal, more or less. And finally, for the COVID dump truck, Washington State University had to fire their head football coach because he wouldn't get the vaccine.
Yep, another case of stupid people running themselves out of a job for minimal reasons. He refused to get a COVID-19 vaccine required by a mandate for state employees being at a state school. He would be required. 4 of his assistant coaches were also terminated by the university for failure to get fully vaccinated by Monday.
Mm-hmm.
He's being replaced by the defensive coordinator. He's one of the highest paid public employees in Washington with a salary of $3.1 million.
Mm.
So yeah, congrats to him.
Yep. All right. So, So moving on from there, that $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill that they've been talking about, it's, looks like it's going to be shrinking because Joe Manchin is a piece of shit.
yep.
I mean, there's really no other way to put it. He, you know, keep in mind, poll after poll has shown that the things within this bill are incredibly popular in his state. He's been confronted by his own constituents about, you know, his refusal to work with this shit. And, you know, it's making him out to be the corrupt asshole that he is.
Yep. Yeah, talking down to people from his houseboat.
Yeah, it was a yacht.
Yeah, a hell of a thing to to be doing as people were, you know, on canoes and such, kayaks, mm-hmm. trying to get a talk with him.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it looks like this thing may be down to about 1.9 trillion to 2.2 trillion, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be disappointing, but it seems like they're at the point where they want to get something passed.
Mm-hmm.
So they can show that they're, you know, making some sort of progress and then going back for the other stuff when they can.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this hopefully gets cleared up here sometime soon.
Mm. All right. Yeah, and on top of all this, he threatened, or at least somebody put it out, that he was threatening to change parties to independent if Dems want him to. First of all, that's not going to happen. He has far too much clout and power as a Democrat as he does now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And he's said publicly, he's like, yeah, that's bullshit. I'm not doing that. But after all the shit that's happened so far, doesn't it kind of sound like something he would do?
Sure.
Yeah.
He is just so flagrantly doing things because he's, you know, paid by the Koch brothers. He's mm-hmm. paid by his own family who owns energy companies and such.
Yeah.
He's invested in energy companies himself. All this sort of dirty money, especially as the head of the energy committee, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what a piece of shit. And speaking of pieces of shit, on the House panel this week voted that the House panel, by the way, that's in charge of, you know, investigating the January 6th investigation, voted to hold Steve Bannon in contempt of Congress.
Yep, for not showing up for mm-hmm. his subpoena. Yeah, the vote sends the measure to the full House for a planned vote Thursday. The chamber approves of the referral would be sent on to federal law enforcement for potential charges. The nine-member committee, made up of seven Democrats and two Republicans, was united in their scathing response to Bannon's refusal mm-hmm. to come before the panel. Yeah, Bannon no-showed for deposition that was sought last Thursday and did not turn over documents for another deadline a week earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, if you're wondering, like, okay, so what does this mean? Well, it's got to, like, get voted on by another. Isn't there, like, another committee it's got to get voted on? Then it's got to go to, like, the Justice Department. And there's a long road to, like, him actually getting any consequences out of that.
It goes to the full House for a plain vote.
Yeah, which I think they did vote on it, didn't they?
Should have.
Yeah.
Then the referral would be sent to federal law enforcement for potential charges. So yeah, still some more to go here, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Show these people that they mean business.
Yeah.
And this is the same kind of charge you get for contempt of court.
Mm-hmm.
In an actual courthouse, but Congress has similar powers like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, moving on from there, one of Rudy Giuliani's former associates, Lev Parnas, has officially been convicted of campaign finance crimes.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
New York jury convicted him of charges that he made illegal campaign contributions to influence U.S. politicians and advance his business interests. The verdict was returned in Manhattan federal courts, where Lev Parnas was on trial for more than 2 weeks, as prosecutors accused him of using other people's money to pose as a powerful political broker, cozy up to some of the nation's star Republican political figures.
Mm-hmm.
One part of the case alleged that Parnas and an associate made illegal donations through a corporate entity to Republican political committees in 2018, including a $325,000 donation to America First Action, a super PAC supporting former President Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Another part said he used the wealth of a Russian financier,
mm-hmm.
Andrei Muravev, to make donations to U.S. politicians, ostensibly in support of an effort to launch a legal recreational marijuana business.
Yep.
Now he's convicted on all counts after about 5 hours of jury deliberations.
Yep, didn't take them very long.
Yep.
Yeah, his ass is going to jail. Speaking of other shit that circles around with other shit, the Trump Organization is now facing a new criminal inquiry over their New York golf club, which I am shocked this did not happen sooner, because I'm pretty sure he's done an awful lot of fucking money laundering at that golf club.
Yeah. This investigation is by Westchester District Attorney Miriam E. Rocha. Mm-hmm. He's examining property valuations at Trump National Golf Course, Westchester, north of New York City. Mm-hmm. So as the knowledge of the investigation confirmed that the town has collected local, that collects local taxes from the course, Ossining mm-hmm. has received a subpoena from Rocha's office for documents. Mm-hmm. They've also subpoenaed records from the golf club. Yeah, the Trump and the town of Ossining have tussled for years over property tax assessments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see. Town Supervisor Dana Levenberg noted in 2018 interview that Trump once claimed a value for tax purposes that was less than a tenth of what the town believed the property was worth.
Mm-hmm.
After Trump was sworn in, his business continued its pattern of suing Ossining over its property tax assessments.
Mm.
In that interview, Levenberg pointed the awkwardness of facing a lawsuit from the business of a sitting U.S. president.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of the former president, he announced his new Truth social media platform, and it fucking crashed and burned hard, like, on the very first fucking day. For one thing, for it supposedly being a social media platform, they will not allow you to criticize Trump ever. And then, of course, there were the slew of people showing up just to post porn, as is typical. And they've already violated some open source software licensing agreements, too.
So this thing is called Truth Social?
Yep.
Very stupid name.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. They're going to be in a beta launch in November with a wider rollout in 2022. Interested users can sign up for the platform on truthsocial.com. Yeah, there have been questions raised about the initial security of the site. Supposedly the site has been hacked
mm-hmm.
already. People were able to sign up to create accounts using a publicly available link.
Mm-hmm.
See, someone here said, I literally just registered Mike Pence. The site hasn't even launched yet, and it's already this vulnerable. Subsequent tweets, they revealed that the account had been suspended.
Mm-hmm.
Another tweet said it appeared the Donald J. Trump account on Truth Social had been hacked. A screenshot Harwell shared showed the pinned post on the account was mm-hmm. of a defecating animal. However, it's not clear if that account belongs to the former president.
Mm.
That'd be weird to start your own social media platform and not have an account reserved for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this... doesn't look good, and the I guess also part of this is that they formed a company that's called the Trump Media and Technology Group, which will be formed by joining the Digital World Acquisition Corp, pending regulatory and social or stockholder approval. DWAC is a special purpose acquisition company which sells stock with the intention of buying private firms.
Mm.
And it really says the corporation will invest $293 million into the Trump project.
Mm-hmm.
Or stock price has already skyrocketed. And you know what group has been heavily invested in this?
Gee, I wonder.
Street Bets.
Mm-hmm.
Calling him Daddy Trump and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Because it went from like $10 to $130.
Mm-hmm.
So... they made money thanks to Daddy Trump, as they call him.
Yeah.
You know, which is great. So, yeah. Let's see. Yeah, they claim it would be a place that, quote, encourages an open, free, and honest global conversation without discriminating against political ideology. Yet its terms of service forbids users from using the platform to, quote, disparage, tarnish, or otherwise harm, in our opinion, us and or the site.
Mm.
Which, gee, doesn't sound like free speech.
Yep.
It sounds like quote-unquote free speech.
Yeah.
As the GOP likes it to be.
Yep.
But yeah, there's that, and yeah, they are using open source software licensing, essentially the same tool set that Mastodon used.
Mm-hmm.
The open source Mastodon social networking software, which is governed by the Affero General Public License, a copyleft license published by the Free Software Foundation, and the stuff is overseen by the Software Freedom Conservancy that keeps an eye on these open source software licensing terms. And they very much are hitting on Truth Social, saying that TMTG ignored the licensing terms, and once caught in the act, Trump's group scrambled and took the site down. Let's see. They wrote in the blog post on Thursday, to comply with the Mastodon software license, Trump's group needs to immediately make that corresponding source code available to all who use the site today while it was live. They failed to do this within 30 days. Their rights and permissions in the software automatically and permanently terminated. They would have to find another software license to use for this. Spend all that time. And you know, it's also part of this whole rollout.
What is that?
I think like Trump Media and Technology Group Plus, something like that, some sort of streaming service.
Yeah.
Or non-woke video content. Whatever the hell that means. So they're looking to do stuff like that as well. So that's a whole pile of shit there for him. So.
Oh, yeah.
Great news then.
Yeah. So speaking of other pieces of shit, Sinclair Broadcasting Group. Yeah, you guys know them. They're the group that sort of owns a bunch of local TV news places and have done things where they forced them to run like conservative editorials by the company's founders, and even made them have to read off scripts for like political stuff, which famously became part of a viral video where they basically collected all of them into one video and showed all this like dozens and dozens of people literally reading off the same script. Well, they suffered a ransomware attack this week and they had a buttload of data stolen.
Yep. Said on Monday that some of its servers and workstations were encrypted with ransomware, and some of its data was stolen from the company's network. They started investigating the potential security incident on Saturday, and on Sunday, it found that certain office and operational networks were disrupted. Let's see. Yeah, the Nashville, Tennessee WZT put out a notice on its website Monday about serious technical issues at the TV station affecting its ability to stream content. We're also currently unable to access our email and your phone calls to the station. They say they've taken measures to contain the incident and that its forensic investigation is ongoing. However, the company said that the data breach has caused and may continue to cause disruption to parts of its business, including certain aspects of local advertisements by local broadcast stations on behalf of its customers. They say they're working diligently to restore operations quickly and securely, and they can't determine at the moment whether or not the data breach of material impact on its business, operations, or financial results. And no ransomware groups have immediately taken credit for this incident either, so that's fun for them. They deserve it and more.
Yeah, couldn't have happened to a nicer group of people. Ugh, well. Now some interesting historical news. Researchers have pinpointed the Vikings arriving in Canada exactly 1,000 years ago. So as I guess, I think it's like more commonly known now than it used to be. But Christopher Columbus was not the first European to touch down in North America. That was actually the Vikings. They made their way into what is now Nova Scotia, like a couple of hundred years earlier than he did. And we know this because, you know, they wrote about it in the sagas. There are artifacts that have been found in the area. And now we can conclusively say where they showed up and when.
Yeah, they settled in a settlement on the northernmost tip of Newfoundland called Lonzo Meadows.
Yep.
Yeah, so they examined 4 pieces of wood recovered at Lonzo Meadows. Samples were no more than discarded sticks and tree trunks, but each had an important marker of at least one clean edge, indicating it had been cut by a metal tool.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, those cuts belong to the Norse.
Yep.
As the indigenous inhabitants in that area at the time didn't have metal tools for that kind of stuff. And, yeah, this is the early such evidence of Viking travels to North America provides more important context into the history of North America and European travels to the continent.
Yeah. And now people are wondering, it's like, okay, so how did Viking native? It wasn't good. I mean, they did trade, you know, but they clashed a lot too. And eventually the Vikings ended up having to abandon their colonies. So it is what it is. But they certainly treated them better than fucking Columbus did.
Yeah, and they actually landed where they intended to be at.
Yeah. So next up in labor news, we got a couple of labor news for you. That walkout we talked about, that Netflix over trans rights and the leaking of the transphobic language that was used in Dave Chappelle's upcoming special. Well, it happened as scheduled, and Netflix openly had to acknowledge their PR mistakes.
As you might not be surprised by, they had there were plenty of people that were opposing them, like Chappelle show or Chappelle fans.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, decided to show up to counter protest. But also people that are transphobic.
Yeah, people who are just generally pieces of shit.
Yep, bearing signs with messages like jokes are funny, Netflix don't cancel free speech. Which, again, they're not a free speech service.
No, and they have said as much in the past.
Yeah, you can't get your stuff on their service without them approving of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they a nice thing, the co-CEO that was just talking all sorts of stupid shit basically owned up to it. Let me see where this is here. Yeah, expressed regret for that internal communication, saying he screwed it up and should have led with a lot more humanity. Let's see. Yeah, and his whole spiel defending their decision to host the Chappelle special brought up comedian Hannah Gadsby, whose big specials Nanette and Douglas are on Netflix. Did not take kindly to it, saying, "You didn't pay me nearly enough to deal with the real world consequences of the hate speech dog whistling you refuse to acknowledge, Ted." Fuck you and your amoral algorithm cult.
Yeah.
Elliot Page also spoke up, saying, "I stand with the trans, non-binary, and BIPOC employees at Netflix, fighting for more and better trans stories in a more inclusive workplace." And Netflix themselves put out a statement saying, "We value our trans colleagues and allies, understand the deep hurt that's been caused. We respect the decision of any employee who chooses to walk out and recognize we have much more work to do, both within Netflix and in our content." So they at least came to their better senses as a in terms of their outward PR. Instead of whatever the fuck that dude was talking about the past week or two, you know, bringing video games and all this other shit for no reason.
Yeah.
Fuck all the people protesting against this stuff.
Yeah.
These people protesting.
And in other labor news, you remember that story about the Yachts strike that was going to happen? Well, they managed to reach a deal with Hollywood just before the strike deadline. And I know I heard some people, it's like, "Oh, man, so there's not going to be a strike." No. This is good. This is what's supposed to happen. You know, if your union is powerful enough that the threat of a strike can get, you know, the bosses to the bargaining table and to cave, that's what's supposed to happen.
Yeah. But yeah, it's still a tentative agreement. They have to go through ratification.
Yeah.
by the voters, which some are not happy with this deal.
Yeah, so they still actually have to vote on this, apparently.
Yeah, I'm not sure when that's going to be happening here.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's still like details about sort of the weekend hours that they are able to work. That's a big deal.
And keep in mind, if they raise enough of a stink, there's time for a future strike, so...
Yeah.
You know, shit can still go down, don't worry. But remember that, like I said, this is how it's supposed to work. You know, negotiators, you go into the negotiation room, you stay at the negotiation table right up until the deadline. And if corporate caves before then that's good. You've accomplished what you were supposed to do. If they don't cave, then, well, you're out on the picket line. So, anyway, moving on from there, we got some... This one is just really fucking sad. So, there's this movie that was being made, an independent film called Rust. It's a Western that co-stars Alec Baldwin. And during the shooting of this film, he discharged a prop gun that apparently somebody had gotten some live ammunition into it at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it ended up killing a award-winning cinematographer and injuring
the director.
Yeah. Now I've also heard that apparently there were two shots that were fired. Or it could have been one shot that hit both of them, which can totally happen.
Some sort of piece of metal in there or something.
Yeah, I mean, this is how fucking Brandon Lee died. Like, all the way back when they were shooting The Crow.
Yeah, and it seems kind of weirdly ironic that this happened as the deal with the IATSE.
Yeah.
That's what happened, where it's like...
They had, like, a bunch of non-union people working on the set, apparently.
Yeah, they had switched, I think, from union to non-union people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was sad, because this cinematographer, Helena Hutchins, had won an award,
mm-hmm.
and was sort of an up-and-coming cinematographer.
Yeah.
In Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And... obviously, Alec Baldwin did not expect this at all, as he very much was shaken up by it.
Oh, yeah.
As people on the right wanted him jailed for this.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't do this on purpose. It's a matter of finding out who the fuck allowed this gun to have live ammunition.
Yeah, the thing... Start with the fact that they had a bunch of non-union working on the set, because that's where you start first. The fact that there wasn't, like, a union... prop master that had checked the gun before they used it in and of itself is extremely unorthodox. So
yeah, I've seen a number of actors on Twitter talking about like quotes of the latest news on this stuff where like basically suggesting that, you know, he was given this gun as like a cold weapon.
Yeah.
What they call it, as in it's ready to go, but apparently had live ammunition in it.
Like,
this is not any sort of, there's like at least a dozen procedures that have been skipped over to make this work.
Yeah. Yeah. That, like I said, after Brandon Lee died, they put in a bunch of protocols that you have to go through when you're working with prop firearms. There's like a bunch of steps you have to go through to make sure that this thing is properly functioning and isn't liable to kill someone.
Yeah. So there's got to be more investigation to what happened here. Like, there's an update from the New York Times saying the assistant director of the Western film Rust grabbed a prop pistol from a gray cart and handed it to the movie star Alec Baldwin, shouting "cold gun,"
which
is supposed to indicate that it did not contain any live rounds.
Yeah.
The safety handle around the crew huddled by the camera.
Mm.
Which is not really what should be happening here.
No.
That's not protocol in any way.
Yeah.
How is there live ammo on the set at all when there's no call for it anywhere?
Yeah.
Like, what is this live ammo? Is it an actual bullet? Is it blanks or some altered ammo, something.
Because believe it or not, blanks can kill if you're close enough.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be non-lethal, but, well, we saw over the BLM protests just how non-lethal, quote-unquote, non-lethal rounds can be.
Yeah, like those rubber bullets are supposed to be shot into the ground to dispense most of that power before it hits somebody, not shot point blank at them.
Yeah. So apparently no charges have been filed. Expect any charges to be filed against Baldwin. It was an accident.
Yeah. It's nothing he premeditated or anything.
Yeah.
Unless something else wild just happened.
Which I doubt.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I have heard it said that Alec Baldwin can be difficult to work with, but
I don't think he would not hurt people.
No. No, he is too much of a professional. But anyway, moving on.
He's going to hurt people. It's going to be emotionally yelling at him.
Yeah, which he has done. Moving on from there, AMC Theaters certain film showings at 240 of its locations.
Yes. Be nice that to have like actual captioning in movies. I've been kind of surprised it's taken until now, as there are plenty of people in theaters that, you know, probably don't have the greatest hearing, especially with how loud theaters can get.
Oh yeah.
That seems like a thing like you could have, you know, as they say here, they're going to have specific showings for these open captioning to happen. You know, I just watched Dune on HBO Max that had captioning, so that exists. They probably do the captioning during the process of making the movie, because that would make it a lot easier for whenever they put out the videos. So now that happens, you know, a month, you know, even at launch, or, you know, weeks later. I've been surprised they don't have, it'd probably be more trouble, but like a way of having the ability to like plug in a headset at your seat. That require a lot of wiring and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah, I mean, isn't that what they do on planes?
Yeah. That's also specifically set up that way versus reconfiguring, you know, theaters that have already been set up, and especially ones that have already done their overhaul to give you more room, leg room and all that to sit.
Yeah.
I don't know if there'd be another way to, I don't know, maybe like a drive-in sort of tune in that way with a special device or something, or an app on your phone, I assume, that could tune into specific broadcasts of audio.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
But, yeah. And next up and more, divisive figure Mel Gibson will star in the John Wick prequel series at Stars.
Yeah, this is a good way to make sure I don't want to ever watch this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called The Continental. Being on Stars is already one hurdle. As I don't know how to get access to that channel.
Me neither.
the show itself that is like a prequel of the big hotel that the assassins hang out at for their business and all that. It's like Mel Gibson's character basically working to turn that from the shady underworld kind of thing to something that's more suitable for assassins to work out of, all that kind of stuff. Which is a neat idea, but they picked the worst possible person to
unfortunately
be the face of this.
Because yeah.
He has all sorts of awful shit he has said
in years. God knows. Where to start?
Attacking Jews.
Oh, yeah. Men. Famous. Yeah. That time when he was, getting through that messy separation and divorce, and they ended up leaking the audio between them, and it was just straight up psychotic. Dropping the N word a couple times. Honestly, I think the last thing I saw him in was movie Dragged Across Concrete, which is a good movie. It's an S. Craig Zahler flick, and probably the one reason why I was able to stand him in that movie is because the character he plays in that movie is a massive piece of shit. He's like a crooked cop, so...
Yeah, just in case you're wondering if cancel culture exists, it doesn't. This guy said the shit he said, and it was a slow process of, you know, washing him off for Hollywood to get access back to him, but he's here.
Yeah.
Been here for a few years at least.
Yeah, he's mostly been doing stuff under, you know, under the radar indie projects, but yeah, he is still very much around. And in some more movie news, Disney has delayed a bunch of its upcoming sequels, which, honestly, we all kind of expected that.
Yeah, they delayed Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness from March 25th next year to May 6th.
Mm-hmm.
And that May 6th date went to went from Thor: Love and Thunder to July 8th.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Black Panther: Wakanda Forever had that date, so now that's moving to November 11th.
Mm.
And with that moving to November, The Marvels has been postponed from November 11th to early 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And The Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania was bumped from February 17th to, I think it's 2023, to July 28th, 2023. Mm. So that's a bunch of MCU sequels and such. They also delayed the next Indiana Jones movie from, let's see... Well, that'll be moving. Wait. No, okay. That was supposed to open July 29th, 2022, next year, mm-hmm. to June 30th, 2023, about a year later.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. I'm trying to see if there's anything else here. See, there's some stuff that hadn't been titled yet, just different Marvel and Disney live action stuff that hadn't been dated yet or named even. I guess they had dates, but not names or whatever, just untitled X thing, you know.
Yeah.
So, but the name stuff moved a good bit, some not too much, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we all kind of saw that COVID did a number on the film industry. But moving on from there, we also got some trailers to talk about. We got a trailer for the Uncharted movie, which, yeah, I forgot that was in production.
Yep.
But yeah, we actually got a trailer this week.
Yeah, that is out February 18th.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Holland as a sort of pre the first Uncharted game.
Mm-hmm.
So he's pretty young. They make fun of him.
Yeah.
Mark Wahlberg is Sully.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great to still have him involved, but
as
Sully, he's a better choice, especially because originally, he was supposed to be Nathan Drake.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's a good exchange with Nolan North commenting on Tom Holland's post about this trailer.
Mm-hmm.
All that and be like, oh, I look good in my 20s. And he responds, yeah, you look good in your 50s. He's like, hey, I'm barely 50. Wait, no, I'm almost 51. Whatever. Just talking shit about how old he is.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, yeah, there are definitely some ties. He makes sure to mention Sam a couple times. Sam Drake
mm-hmm.
shows up in the fourth game.
Yep, Sam, his brother. Yeah,
yeah, because I think canonically he knows of Sam, but just doesn't talk about him because he thinks he's dead.
Yeah.
See, Sully's there. He doesn't have a mustache or anything, but they do have a Uncharted 3 style sequence with the plane.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
Bunch of cargo hanging out of it. So
yeah.
Falling out of it like it did in Uncharted 3. It's all attached, but some pretty wild stunts. So they're definitely doing some neat stuff in that instance and some good little bits of humor there.
Mm-hmm.
I was a Scottish guy talking to him. And he's like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Not understanding him. So could be neat. I don't know. Looks all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And finally, we got the Lost Session Cowboy Bebop show on Netflix.
Yeah, which is a fun little trailer. of this show, showing like a whole sequence of them going for this bounty. Playing around with the format of the way it's displayed of these sort of split screen bars. Moving them around until it becomes like an actual metal pipe that's Spike is using to knock out a bunch of people. Some fun stuff. Well worth checking out.
Oh yeah.
I've used the music and all that.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, the music itself is really good. I mean, they basically done a good chunk of redoing or just reusing a lot of the original sound, which was itself pretty amazing. So
yeah.
Yeah, I really want this show to succeed. Because the original Cowboy Bebop is... And I know they've been trying to get this particular project off the ground for like a damn decade. So, yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I do believe we have ourselves a show, folks. Yes, we do. So, with that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not there yet, don't worry. We will be eventually. As soon as we find out about a new aggregator, a new kind of a technology, we are all over it very, very fast. And of course, if you liked what you heard, please recommend us to your friends or your enemies. You know, they may hate you, but they may actually like us. And hey, that goes well for both of us. So with that, I would like to thank Chris Logi for joining me again this week. Hopefully next week we will finally have a bigger crowd to work with. Yeah, if you're doing any trick-or-treating on Halloween or doing any Halloweening stuff next week, please be safe. And, you know, there are, you know, like those stories of people putting razor blades and poison and shit in the candy turned out to all be bullshit, but there are still assholes about, so, you know, act accordingly.
Like people giving out their edibles?
Yeah.
Those are expensive. You're not going to give those out for free.
Yeah, and they also tend to be really fucking intense, too. So,
yeah.
And you can usually tell when they're edibles because they smell awful.
And they got weed leaves all over them.
Yeah, weed has very distinctive smell to it. So trust me, they can't just accidentally give it to you. But anyway, yes. So for Chris Logi, I have been Brandon Perkins. Join us next time. And for now, good night, sleep tight. And as I will continue to say until the end of the pandemic, if you have not gotten the vaccine yet and can be vaccinated, please get vaccinated. I would like to be able to walk out of my house without a mask sometime this year, or maybe in my lifetime, even though it's only Halloween.